Welcome back to The Found Symbol. We are four actual Freemasons, and we are here to discuss all the symbols, signs, and Easter eggs in Episode 8, Cascade, of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol. I'm John, and I'm here with Jason, Joe, and RJ, and we are going to talk about all the fun stuff that happened this week on The Lost Symbol. And fair warning, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you have not seen today's episode of The Lost Symbol, go ahead and watch that. It's pretty cool. But what did you guys think of the episode this week?
Woo! Some stuff happened.
It's a fun ride.
It was good.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, right, we said this last week and the week before, like when we started to see these departures, it has really taken on a life of its own.
It's bifurcated.
It is bifurcated. It is trifurcated, quadricated. Yes. Like, yeah, the like if you had the original Dan Brown book and he went back in and decided to make a choose your own adventure version. I mean, that's what this particular show has become. I'm
complete with sex scene.
You know, complete with sex scene. Sure, and I found no castrated balls.
That well, that's true. That's
I'm happy because about
in the book, in the book, Moloch was a eunuch.
Yet,
eunuch.
Oh yeah, yet.
So the good news is, I found one source that says that it's actually been picked up as a series. And not just a mini series on Peacock. So maybe we'll see season two. Maybe we'll keep this going for a while because the deeper and deeper the rabbit hole goes.
But are they going to stick with the same story, or is it going to be new?
They got rid of that like three episodes ago. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, we have seen a cinematic change in the last 10 years when it comes to movies and things. We're not afraid of different universes. We're not afraid of different characters playing different people. So you know what? If a Robert Langdon series comes out of this, and they just keep calling it The Lost Symbol, and you know, maybe a different guy plays Robert Langdon next time because he's older or younger, or maybe they get Colin Hanks.
I consider this the multiverse of Robert Langdon. So,
yeah, I mean it's kind of a cool thing that they've been doing. I've been really enjoying it. So, yeah,
awesome. Well, let's get into this week's episode. So this week's episode was titled Cascade. I was wondering where they were going to go with that. And early on, they claim it's a sonic weapon that's that Moloch is trying to get his hands on. Not in the book. And really doesn't have much of an esoteric description other than, you know, the whole resonance and resonating frequencies that we'll talk about a little bit later. But they are a real thing. That's what's fascinating because I've studied these sonic weapons for quite some time about how you can direct sound waves and vibrations at people to make them ill, to make them sick, to make them, be a non-lethal or sometimes lethal way of subduing someone. So this is no kidding, a real thing, not made up for Hollywood.
Yeah, let's.
I have seen one firsthand. He's 8 years old. His name is Nate, and I'm not kidding. And y'all have seen him too. He can.
You don't talk about organs.
Nate
that way. Man. What was funny about this whole thing, this sonic, it's not funny, but it echoes some real life sentiment that's actually happened, right? The possible sonic weapon that was used at the Cuban embassy.
Correct.
And now they're saying that
Havana syndrome.
And it's actually now been categorized in another country over in Europe now. I can't remember. I want to just say Russia, but I don't know if it was Russia or not. But Havana syndrome has now been found over there also. So who knows? I mean, it's a real deal thing. And you guys are terrible. I see,
of course, well, the technology is still evolving, too, right? It's getting better and it's getting more pinpoint accurate, right? Rather than just broad thing. But, you know, it even exists in mythology, you know, like, you know, like even South Park, like 20 years ago, was talking about something like the brown note, where if you play certain sounds at a resonant frequency, that you can, you know, affect someone remotely. So, you're welcome.
John didn't write the subtitles, and that was in Vienna, Austria, where that happened in Europe. As far as the Havana syndrome, like.
Not the brown note
manifestations, or the brown note. Okay, gotcha. Although that may have happened as well.
That was at the worldwide recorder.
That's more Switzerland. It's more like Switzerland, yes.
Or your local Taco Bell.
Yes.
All right.
And then, so that's what the title is based on. But we'll talk more about frequencies and harmonics a little bit later. But let's talk a little bit now about Ramayana. How did that get brought up in this episode?
Yeah, so they had, we don't have a slide for it, right? But what happened was Catherine asks Robert Langdon how Dad is, right? So Solomon, he said he's reading, and he's reading the Ramayana in original Sanskrit.
In the original Sanskrit. Right?
So now you're like, oh man, this guy can read Sanskrit. I'm pretty good with Sanskrit number system, but I can't read Sanskrit. So, a 10,000-year-old dead language. So, really interesting. But for people out there who don't know what that book is about, it's an ancient Hindu text. It's about basically Rama, who has a different name that is also used in the text. He's a child. He's exiled. He spends 14 years roaming like the forests and in the wild. There's a bad character, right, named Ravana, and he is the antagonist. He abducts Rama's wife, Sita, and they go to war. Rama wins. He becomes king, and the entire thing is set in the third Yuga, which is like the third age. So in the Hindu culture, right, it's kind of similar to how the Mayan calendar have the Bactunes, but these are called yugas, and they're a certain length in years long. So a pretty cool concept. But what was interesting about this particular story is the story of Ramayana is kind of similar to what's happening here, right? The king has exiled his son. He spends time in the wilderness. So there's a parallel that goes along with the movie or the show that we're watching, actually. So will that happen? Will that happen here, right? You know, I don't know. Like, have they given us a clue to what the future of the show holds? Who knows? But it was cool.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't pick up on that, or at least go down that rabbit hole. So thank you for sharing that. Then we see early on that they start to not only acquire, but hack Moloch's phone. So we actually see them decrypting this hacked phone. And what's going on here, Joe?
Ooh, so not a symbol, but we were just talking about this before in the green room. So this, or technology like this, I love that it opens up a Windows command prompt there. That's so awful.
On an iPhone.
Yeah. But speaking of this, so there is, especially for the tinfoilers out there, there is technology. It used to be called Gray Key. I think it got bought by another company. And then it was available commercially for maybe a week. And then it came off market and started to get sold to law enforcement only. But it is basically a box the size of an Apple TV. And you would plug an iPhone into it, and it would brute force your passcode without initiating the auto lock on an iPhone or Android device.
Nice.
So again, they sold it for about a week out commercially, and now only law enforcement has it, probably with good reason. But yeah, this is super real, and you can brute force hack iPhones with passcodes. So Use your Face ID.
Use your Face ID. Awesome. Very cool. Then we get into, well, they get hacked and they go through this hacker's like cinematic. It seemed a little cheesy at first.
Well, what do you think? I know we're gonna get into something here in a second, but the reason I put this in here was, for whatever reason, this seemed really similar to the room that you had to walk through in the book, where it was like this pitch black room.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could only see the light at the end of the tunnel, right? And you had to follow like a light to get through this room, right? The Institute of Noetic Sciences. And for whatever reason, when I saw this scene, I was like, oh man, it's kind of like the book, even though this is super bright. And in the book, it's like this, you know, dark room and you have to follow a light trail carpet. Or whatever to get, yeah, the light carpet. Yeah, I don't know. So for whatever reason, this kind of hit me with that. And I had to throw it in there and mention it for the people who had read the book. Yeah, did you have that same thought? Yum? What do you keep saying yum for?
I didn't think yum? Because you said yum.
I didn't say
yum. You were talking about dudes that look like Robert Langdon, and all of a sudden you said yum.
That was totally Freudian.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
He's handsome. Okay, I'll give all it right. that.
We'll go with that.
He's handsome.
So then, moving on, we have an introduction to semantics, which is really part of the MacGuffin that carried this episode through about why Malak was studying semantics, how it related to the Cascade sonic weapon, and the ultimate goal of this episode. So what is semantics, Jason?
So semantics is a subset of modal vibrational phenomena. Essentially, big science-y words, meaning that semantics is the study of the visual patterns that sound waves make. So if you've ever seen the video where someone wraps a subwoofer in saran wrap and then, pours like pancake batter into it and, they turn the subwoofer on and the pancake batter goes from a liquid to like a semi-solid state with the vibrations. They do this with sand as well. That essentially is semantics. And so, it came into being, as far as we know, in about 1680, Robert Hooke was able to see nodal patterns associated with modes of vibration on glass panes. And Hooke ran a bow across an edge of a glass plate, covered in flour, and saw the nodal patterns emerge. Yes, thank you, Robert. That's non-Newtonian fluid. Oh, there we go.
Right, so you need a non-Newtonian fluid to capture this. Here they're using vodka, but you can use something.
So it's like a 3-to-1
right.
water to cornstarch mix you can do. Mm-hmm. And that'll give you what they, like if you look up grade school, like grammar school type science experiments, look up something called Ubleck, just like the Dr. Seuss book.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a non-Newtonian, it's your base non-Newtonian fluid. And just like Jason said, it looks just like pancake batter, stiffens under pressure, but flows like a liquid. So the second you jab your finger into it, like it stops it. I actually ran some experiments with this in high school, if it could stop, if it had a use for projectile weapons. I didn't have any luck. So, but it's awesome stuff.
Right.
So interestingly enough, there's been, this emphasis on, supernatural power and healing, right? Well, it has been speculated by some researchers that the application of sound and ultrasound in particular can cause wounds to heal more quickly than they would otherwise.
It's pretty cool.
So there are some other articles that talk about the application of high frequency sound to help bones heal faster. They're not scientifically proven or accepted, but they do exist.
Mm-hmm. And it all kind of also relates to the whole sacred geometry aspect, right? Where we're now taking vibrations, turning them into visible shapes, and those shapes, surprisingly, come into...
Artriskelions!
You know what? Since you brought it up, why not? No. Let's talk about Triskelions, because...
They should have renamed this episode Triskelion.
Fidget there were about spinner.
14,000 of them.
Should have named the series Triskelion.
Yes.
The Lost Triskelion.
The Lost Triskelion.
If they don't, like, do something cool with this by the end, I don't know. You know, I'm just going to throw a book at the TV.
I think that's it. I think this is the Leviathan Group logo or whatever, or his logo, and whoever's every logo tattoo, it is.
Every tattoo parlor from all over the United States, anybody who's watching this, this is going to be like the newest thing.
That all the new masons are going to get that, yeah.
Some new
tribal is so far out. Triskelion is so in.
They're going to start Swirly's seeing the Triskelion, like right here. Yeah.
Swirly's up or Swirly's down?
Oh
Swirly's out. Swirly's out.
One thing I did want to mention too that I found was that the actual lab where they were decoding or decrypting the phone and got hacked into their network. Their network was set up in a table in the middle of a Masonic lodge.
It was set up like, it's right next to the altar. I think it's not actually on the altar.
Or is it the altar? The altar of Triskelion.
That is where we usually set the projector up. So
yes. But it was just a very odd placement of, you know, in a Masonic lodge room, because you can see the officers' chairs. I didn't even catch that. Yeah, it was only for a short period of time. But yes, why not? Let's set up our decryption lab right in the middle of a lodge room. I don't know. I guess that's every room's a lodge room when you're part of the Leviathan group.
The chair in the north is wigging me out.
It's awkward. Yes, it shouldn't belong.
It's OES. It's OES. It's fine.
Oh, there we go.
But we did see another handsome fellow, Jason. Jason had a good eye for this one. We have all the Leviathans meet up and start to plan what to do with this cascade weapon. And Jason points out a neat little Easter egg. What's this?
Yeah, so they're in the boardroom of Peter Solomon's mansion. All talking about whether or not to give over this sonic weapon to Malak, and who is in the portrait presiding over the entire meeting about using sound, but none other than the famous Freemason Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Huzzah.
Leviathan Group.
He was also a member of the Leviathan Group, apparently.
Of course.
Apparently so.
The OG.
But he was a virtuoso composer. He was a Freemason. He's known for the magic flute, among, you know, all sorts of other things, but especially the magic flute in Masonic circles because of some Masonic ties. That was my first ever
Masonic presentation. Was on the magic.
Mine was on Mozart's Flight of the Triskelions.
Touche, sir.
So he was made a Mason in Vienna at the Lodge Beneficence in December of 1784, and then became a fellow and then Master Mason in 1785.
Nice.
So there is a Masonic connection there. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's Peter Solomon's house. Of course, there's a Masonic connection in every dang room.
And that was, that was a great That's connection a nice house. To make. I didn't see the portrait, and even if I had, I don't think I would have made the connection between famous composer and a sound weapon. I think that was really cool, clever, very good,
clever girl.
I saw it, and I'm like, wait a second, I've seen that painting before. Like, that's Mozart.
Nice.
Yeah.
But Robert saw a connection later on in this scene.
Yeah.
Where they hated each other two episodes ago, and now they're...
That's right. So they hated each other. They had this relationship, right? And it was all leading up to this. They go to the mom's house, and they figure all this stuff out. And you kind of had some clue. She's like, oh, will you just lay with me? And he's like, okay, because he's a dude. And
no thanks. No thanks. I'm good.
Yeah, no, yum. Thanks, I'm good, right? Yum. So then what happens, right? He lays here, and you're going to think that I'm going to tell you something about this awesome pattern on her mom's pillows. But really what I'm going to tell you is in this scene is created an obelisk. Robert creates one as this is happening.
I didn't see, was that off frame?
Totally off frame. Right, it's a little bit south. Okay. A little bit south, but there's an obelisk that becomes erected. And you know, Masonic symbolry all around.
Oh. It's the manifestation of the circumpunct.
Completely. John does a great presentation on this if you're curious.
Yes. Yes, the circumpunct and phallus worship.
I'm going to add this to my obelisk talk.
I'm available for any lodge presentation. Let's talk about
only for 15 minutes though.
Cheers.
See, we're talking about this because we can't talk about this on TMR.
Yes. All right. So then we see Sato. She's roughed up. She's recovering. What's going on here?
But she's not dead. All right. She's not dead though.
That's good.
She's not dead. We all thought she died in the last episode, right? Like I thought she totally got garroted. And is that probably not a word? But the guy used, you know,
that's a word.
Strangle. Okay, so
it's a word.
She's recovering, almost crushes her larynx, and she's having this flashback. And I'm going to toss it back to, I think, John or Jason, who, when we were talking about episode number 7, John talked about this. He, meaning Malak, Zachary, uses 3 words, and it means life, death, rebirth. And when she's having this flashback, it sounds to me as if he whispered that to her in her ear. As
I checked the subtitles, he absolutely said the same thing.
It did. He did. Yes.
So that tells me, now I'm super curious, did he know that he was almost killing her? Was it part of the plan? And what's their connection from before that they kept secret? Because there's still something that's going to happen. And I thought for sure when her partner handed her the notepad that she was going to write something crazy down and we were going to get some wild revelation. But instead, you know, it's just, did Nunez tell you to come? Yeah. So I'm really excited to see where this goes. And I don't know what it means yet, but I heard that whisper. I was like, oh no. So yeah, pretty wild.
So in a way, like Malak was trying to force this new state of consciousness on his father in the chamber, this could have been Malak trying to force a heightened state of consciousness on his former mentor as well.
You know, okay, so we were bashing this Triskelion for so long, and yet they were telling us in you know, plain sight that not only is there the whole entire story arc, but I think within each episode there's a story arc of all 3, life, death, and rebirth. From when Peter Solomon was in the tank and then was reborn, from Malak's transformation in the Turkish camp with Prison Yoda, and now even with Sato coming out, being reborn and being transformed, obviously being physically and mentally impacted by this event. I'm gonna say the writers are a little smart here.
Is it Prison Yoda or heavily tatted Chuck Dunning?
No, it's... Ooh.
We've not seen them in the same place at the same time, so...
That's true.
Could be Chuck.
Could be.
He's very into contemplative practices. He's a master at those. So. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We so love then, you, Chuck.
We... so then we also... You, we fast forward. They're hanging out at the mom's house, and we find out the mom's been wiring money over the years to Malak.
Yeah, actually, if you go back to Sato real quick.
All right.
So something I think somebody was going to mention here was the way she was cut. So
I mean, her throat was cut
across.
Across, which is kind of hurt. Almost from ear to ear.
That's gotta hurt. Yeah,
pretty wild. Anyway, yeah. Yep, all right. So This was interesting. So you guys know how I'm always trying to add up the numbers. I didn't find anything here. You know, the trade ID adds up to 28.1. If the point is a minus, it's 27. But that's not the reason why I put this in here. It says Smithson. And so Smithson was kind of interesting because Smithson, if you guys don't know, Smithson, maybe this is a little homage. Smithson is based on James Smithson, who essentially is the founder of the Smithsonian Institute. And when he died, you know, he did have a couple heirs, but what his nephew basically said that his will stipulated that his estate, quote, would be used to found in Washington under the name of the Smithsonian Institution and Establishment for the Increase and Diffusion of Knowledge Among Men, and that this institution would always be free admission. So basically the Smithsonian Foundation, you know, they make money through the sales of books and things, but the actual museum, the actual building to get in is by its will and establishment is free. And Smithson is a Freemason, of course. And, he made his fortunes. He came over. I think if I'm not mistaken, he was an orphan. And that's why he has Smithson as his last name, and where you get Smithsonian from. So, really interesting. He was an orphan rather, I think. Anyway, illegitimate child. So I thought that was a cool homage. If whether or not they intended it, that's how I took it. And I'm sticking with it.
Well, I would give you 2 points for that, because in the book that we've totally departed from, the place where Catherine works is a Smithsonian building, and she's being funded by the Smithsonian. So, and I think Peter actually references that Smithson is a Mason in the book, but we didn't see the cool dark room that you were talking about, but all that stuff. And then like where in the book, remember where the girl got killed in the weird alcohol pool? That all happened at this secret Smithsonian Institute, which is nowhere to be found.
That is true.
It's the Institute for the Noetic Sciences, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then, you know, something caught my eye is a Warrenton, Virginia address. I thought that was fascinating because, you know, Jason, Joe, and I can throw a rock and hit Warrenton. So, obviously, Balak is doing some shady business out of Warrenton. What's going on now? Actually, no, it's Isabel Solomon. It's the mom. So this is where the mom's house, where they're supposed to be camping out. Jason, what's actually there at that address?
I don't know.
Well, you can look it up in Google.
Yeah. Apparently a bloody t-shirt on the counter
there. Someone had a bad day.
I was curious. That's definitely Warrenton for you. Yeah.
Address, and I was just curious what's there. And 1267 Blackwell Road is not an actual address. Go figure. I tried different combinations of 1267. Nothing to be found on Blackwell Road in Virginia. But, you know, maybe they got some kind of weird thing going on somewhere else, but I thought it was funny that there was a bloody t-shirt there.
Planted well in advance by the Lost Symbol crew.
Back in 2020.
Yeah. So the closest...
I'm also seeing a discarded pack of cigarettes.
Yes. The closest Masonic reference here is that there is a Masonic lodge that meets in Warrenton, Virginia. Just a couple miles down from this purported address. So while there may not be anything secret cool Masonic here, just drive about, you know, 2 more minutes down the road and you'll be at Mount Carmel Masonic Lodge.
Which is a lodge in our district.
That's right. So let's see. So what else did you find? Let us know in the comments below. That's all for this week's episode. And if you want to see more comment and commentary and analysis and real other cool Masonic stuff about what goes on in Freemasonry, subscribe to this channel. I would love to see you over at the Masonic Roundtable. And we will see you next week.